Hello there, family. Welcome to the first edition of Steve Reads. Y'all always said you'd listen to me read the phone book or a bedtime story, so I figured I would provide this service for those of you that have subscribed to our Patreon. Now, what I'm going to be doing in this project is reading random things. Might be the first chapter of a novel I love that will remain unnamed for various reasons. Might be the back of a cereal box. Might be some poetry that I taught in my history as an English teacher. It could just be me rambling on, giving you a place to put your head to wind down at night. So why don't we get started with the first chapter of an unnamed book that I love with every fiber of my being. Settle in, family. A few miles south of Soledad, the Salinas River drops in close to the hillside bank and runs deep and green. The water is warm, too, for it has slipped twinkling over the yellow sands and the sunlight before reaching the narrow pool. On one side of the river, the golden foothill slopes curve up to the strong and rocky Gabilan Mountains, but on the valley side, the water is lined with trees. Willows, fresh and green with every spring, carrying in their lower leaf junctures the debris of the winter's flooding, and sycamores with mottled, white, recumbent limbs and branches that arch over the pool. On the sandy bank under the trees, the leaves lie deep and so crisp that a lizard makes a great skittering if he runs among them. Rabbits come out of the brush to sit on the sand in the evening, and the damp flats are covered with the night tracks of coons and with the spread pads of dogs from the ranches and the split wedge tracks of deer that come to drink in the dark. There is a path through the willows and among the sycamores, a path beaten hard by boys coming down from the ranches to swim in the deep pool, and beaten hard by tramps who come wearily down from the highway in the evening to jungle up near water. In front of the low horizontal limb of a giant sycamore, there is an ash pile made by many fires. The limb is worn smooth by men who have sat on it. Evening of a hot day started the little wind moving among the leaves. The shade climbed up the hills toward the top on the sandbanks. The rabbits sat as quietly as little gray sculptured stones. And then, from the direction of the state highway, came the sound of footsteps on crisp sycamore leaves. The rabbits hurried noiselessly for cover. A stilted heron labored up into the air and pounded downriver, and for a moment, the place was lifeless. And then two men emerged from the path and came into the opening of the green pool. They had walked in single file down the path. Even in the open, one stayed behind the other. Both were dressed in denim trousers and in denim coats with brass buttons. Both wore black shapeless hats, and both carried tight blanket rolls slung over their shoulders. The first man was small and quick, dark of face with restless eyes and sharp, strong features. Every part of him was defined. Small, strong hands, slender arms, a thin and bony nose. Behind him walked his opposite, a huge man, shapeless of face with large, pale eyes, with wide, sloping shoulders, and he walked heavily, dragging his feet a little, the way a bear drags his paws. His arms did not swing at his sides, but hung loosely. The first man stopped short in the clearing, and the follower nearly ran him over. He took off his hat and wiped the sweatband with his forefinger and snapped the moisture off. His huge companion dropped his blankets and flung himself down and drank from the surface of the green pool, drank with long gulps, snorting into the water like a horse. The small man stepped nervously beside him. "Lenny," he said sharply. "Lenny, for God's sake, don't drink so much." Lenny continued to snort into the pool. The small man leaned over and shook him by the shoulder. "Lenny, you're going to be sick like you was last night." Lenny dipped his whole head under, hat and all, and then he sat up on the bank and his hat dripped down on his blue coat and ran down his back. "That's good," he said. "You drink some, George. You take a good big drink." He smiled happily. George unslung his bindle and dropped it gently on the bank. "I ain't sure it's good water," he said. "Looks kind of scummy." Lenny dabbled his big paw in the water and wiggled his fingers so that the water arose in little splashes. Rings widened across the pool to the other side and came back again, and Lenny watched them go.
Look, George, look at what I've done.
George knelt beside the pool and drank from his hand with quick scoops.
Tastes all right, he admitted. Don't really seem to be running, though. You never ought to drink water when it ain't running, Lenny, he said hopelessly.
Ah, you'd drink out of a gutter if you was thirsty.
He threw a scoop of the water into his face and rubbed it about with his hand, under his chin and around the back of his neck, and then he replaced his hat, pushed himself back from the river, and drew up his knees and embraced them. Lenny, who had been watching, imitated George exactly. He pushed himself back, drew up his knees, embraced them, looked over to George to see whether he had it just right. And he pulled his hat down a little more over his eyes, the way George's hat was. George stared morosely at the water. The rims of his eyes were red with sun glare, and he said angrily,
"We could have just as well rode clear to the ranch if that bastard bus driver knew what he was talking about. Just a little stretch down the highway, he says. Just a little stretch. Goddamn near 4 miles, that's what it was. Didn't want to stop at the ranch gate. That's what it was. Too goddamn lazy to pull up. Wonder he isn't too damn good to stop in Soledad at all. Kicks us out and says, just a little stretch down the road. I bet it was more than 4 miles. Damn hot day.
Lenny looked timidly over to him.
George?
Yeah, what do you want?
Where are we going, George?
The little man jerked down the brim of his hat and scowled over at Lenny.
So you forgot that already, did you? I gotta tell you again, do I? Jesus Christ, you're a crazy bastard.
I forgot, Lenny said softly. I tried not to forget. Honest to God, I did, George.
Okay, I'll tell you again. I ain't got nothing else to do. Might just as well spend all my time telling you things, and you forget them, and I tell you again.
Tried and tried, said Lenny, but it didn't do no good. I remember about the rabbits, George.
To hell with the rabbits. It's all you can ever remember is them rabbits. Okay, now you listen. This time you got to remember so we don't get in no trouble. You remember sitting in the gutter on Howard Street and watching that blackboard?
Lenny's face broke into a delighted smile.
Well, sure, George, I remember that, but what'd we do then? I remember some girls come by, and you said
to hell with what I said. You remember about us going into Murray and Reddy's? And they give us some work cards and bus tickets.
Oh, sure, George, I remember that now.
His hand went quickly into his side coat pockets, and he said gently,
George, I ain't got mine. I must have lost it.
He looked down at the ground in despair.
You never had none, you crazy bastard. I got both of them here. You think I'd let you carry your own work card?
Lenny grinned with relief.
I thought I put it in my side pocket.
His hand went into his pocket again. George looked sharply at him.
What'd you take out of that pocket?
Ain't a thing in my pocket, Lenny said cleverly.
I know there ain't. You got it in your hand. What you got in your hand, hiding it.
I ain't got nothing, George. Honest.
Come on. Give it here.
Lenny held his closed hand away from George's direction.
It's only a mouse, George.
A mouse. A live mouse.
Just a dead mouse, George. I didn't kill it. Honest. I found it dead.
Give it here, said George.
Oh, let me have it, George.
Give it here.
Lenny's closed hand slowly obeyed. George took the mouse and he threw it across the pool to the other side amongst the brush.
What do you want of a dead mouse, anyway?
I could pet it with my thumb while we walked along, said Lenny.
Well, you ain't petting no mice when you walk with me. You remember where we're going now?
Lenny looked startled, and then an embarrassment hid his face against his knees.
I forgot again.
Jesus Christ, George said resignedly. Well, look, we're going to work on a ranch like the one we come from up north.
Up north?
In Weed.
Oh, sure, I remember. In Weed.
The ranch we're going to is right down there, about a quarter of a mile. We're going to go in and say the boss. Now, look, I'll give him the work tickets, but you ain't going to say a word. You just stand there, don't say nothing. If he finds out what a crazy bastard you are, we won't get no job. If he sees you work before he hears you talk, we're set. You got that?
Sure, George. Sure, I got it.
Okay, now we go in to see the boss. What are you going to do?
Lenny thought. His face grew tight with thought. I ain't going to say nothing. Just going to stand there.
Good boy, that's swell. Now you say that 2 or 3 times over so you won't forget it.
Lenny droned to himself softly. I ain't going to say nothing. I ain't going to say nothing. I ain't going to say nothing.
Okay, said George. And you ain't going to do no bad things like you done in weed, neither.
Lenny looked puzzled. Like I done in weed?
Oh, so you forgot that too, did you? Well, I ain't going to remind you fear you do it again.
A lot of understanding broke on Lenny's face.
They run us out of weed,
he exploded triumphantly. Run us out, hell, said George disgustedly. We run. They was looking for us, but they didn't catch us.
Lenny giggled happily. I didn't forget that, you bet.
George lay back on the sand and crossed his hands under his head, and Lenny imitated him, raising his head to see whether he were doing it right. God, you're a lot of trouble, said George. I'd get along so easy and so nice if I didn't have you on my tail. I could live so easy and maybe have a girl.
For a moment, Lenny lay quiet, and then he said hopefully, we gonna work on a ranch, George?
All right, you got that. But we're gonna sleep here, because I got a reason.
I'm going to stop the reading there and talk to you a little bit, family. This is obviously some John Steinbeck I'm throwing at you. And I taught this novel for many, many years. And it's the story of an able person and a person with intellectual challenges or disabilities and how they care for each other and the tragic things that happen in a Dust Bowl setting to a person whose mind and body are not in concert when it comes to intellectual ability and physical strength. If you recognize George and Lenny, you know the novel I'm talking about. But I also wanted to look at it. This was written by an abled person about someone with an intellectual disability. And one of the things I always taught when I taught this class was how folks with such challenges and disabilities were treated in the 1930s and what cognitive and mental health looked like. And those were mostly asylums or hospital wards, if that. And we always have a long discussion throughout the course of the book of George's treatment of Lenny and Lenny's right to exist in this world where he's seen as a grown man with a child's mind and ultimately the tragic ending of this novel. But I always enjoy Steinbeck's pastoral writing and the way he crafts his world. And a lot of my pacing that you hear in Old Gods comes from my love of that writing and just the way Steinbeck loved Salinas, California, and that part of the state, and just how my goal was to be able to inhabit Appalachia the same way. And I thought I would share that reading with you in our first edition of Steve Reads. Other editions might be shorter, they might be longer, but I hope it helps you kind of drift off, and maybe you're fading right now, family. That's the intent of this part of this little bit of Patreon bonus content, just to listen to Steve Reed and know that you should rest now, unwind, and get some sleep.